break here in a little bit. We're going to go through the quality measures quickly. All right. It doesn't affect me. It does not affect me. Did you make them? Did you build them? All right. Okay, so let's do a little quick overview of the quality measures. Number one is that you have some new topics. Woohoo! You've got bedfast. Remember we talked about bedfast? I mean that screwy definition? Well, it's now a new measure for the public to see. Gone is your only positive quality measure, improvement in walking. So gone is the only one that was a positive. God love them, right? The facility admission profile was a way to risk adjust on the type of admissions that you did. They kind of got rid of that methodology. They employed some other risk adjustment systems in place, and so they didn't find that that was as statistically valid, so they have different risk adjustments now, but they took out that particular one. They did something called paired measures, which what they did was four of them are paired together, so you have two pairs. So that if all of a sudden if I'm a consumer and I want to choose, I want to know the number of people who were incontinent in your building. I'm concerned that, you know, so how I want to check to see how well you take care of people that are incontinent in their bladder. Well, automatically you'll also get, me as a consumer, I will also get the number of catheters you have. And why would they put catheters and incontinence together? Because they're looking to make sure that you're not improving your incontinency by putting catheters in. That's a paired measure. And same with high risk and low risk for pressure sores. So if I choose high risk, then they'll also get low risk. If I choose low risk, I'll also get high risk. So those are paired measures. That's kind of a new concept. Okay? These quality measures are calculated quarterly. So unlike quality indicators, which you can calculate on demand. Anytime you want a quality indicator, whether it's 2 months old, or 3 months old, six months back, you know, 2 weeks back, whatever it is, you can ask for quality indicators on demand. Quality measures are not on demand. They are calculated for you on a quarterly basis. Okay? And they put this information out there for you. We'll talk about that in just a second. But every time they recalculate a quarter for you, they will update the old information. The previous data is now gone. So you just had April, May, and June, and you're getting ready in a day or so. I'm not sure when they'll publish these, but you'll have your next quarter of July of this year. So in a few days, tomorrow, starting July, you'll have new measures coming out at some point this coming month. Now, minimum cases for reporting. You saw that there's post-acute measures and chronic care measures. Post-acute are the people that are short stay, that are people that are traditionally your rehab, your they're Medicare Part A type people. And in order for them to supply the public with information, they have to have at least 20 valid assessments in that period they're looking at. As long as they have 20, then they'll publish your numbers. For the chronic stay, people who stay at least for 3 months, they have to have at least 30. Right, that's okay. The post-acute care measures are based on a six-month window, six-month look back. Okay, so it's, or six-month time frame that they're looking at measures. Okay, now, and the chronic care, look at 3 months, that's their target period. The problem is with your quality measures is that you're looking in the past. So the information that they're showing the public, the information that you look at is information that happened a long time ago. But that's okay too, there's still, you can use that information beautifully for trends and looking for areas for improvement, even though it's not new. And that's also something else you want to pass along to the public, that the information that you're seeing is not a reflection of the people that are here today. Because maybe the people that you're looking at on the post-acute have been gone for 3 months. They're no longer even residents in our building. So that's information that you pass along. If you understand these measures, then you can really talk very well about them. Now, this one's interesting. Let's take a few minutes on this one. This information, the quality measures, now you can see them on the Nursing Home Compare website, and all I get as a consumer is your statistics. I get a graph. I don't know who they are, right? But guess what? You have access as a provider to the information before it gets published on the Nursing Home Compare website. Did you know that? There's a system called, it's called Keys. I think it stands for Quality Initiative Evaluation System. But the, it's almost like a, it's like a folder. And this is available that you can go in, you can access your own quality measure information. Now, this is a very interesting little topic. For those of you who are administrators and DONs in here, I want to give you a little heads up. What happens is that when the MDSs get put in your computer, then your MDS coordinators transmit. For administrators only, how often are your MDS coordinators supposed to transmit? How often are they supposed to? Does any administrator know that? How often are they supposed to transmit? Okay, most of them do transmit weekly. Hopefully they do. But you have every MDS, once it's completed, it must be transmitted within a month, basically. But most people tend to do it on a weekly basis. Now, is there a way, administrators, for you to know how, let's say, for instance, I was your new MDS coordinator and I've been there for a couple of months, and you come say, Andrea, how often are you transmitting? And you have an awful lot of overtime going on here, and so how many MDSs do you do like in a week? I go, oh man, I must do like 50 MDSs a week, and I transmit like two or three times a week. I'm just busy all the time. Is there a way, administrator and DON, to know that I do that without looking at your own MDS software? Who knows? What administrator knows how to do that? Yes. Oh! That is deserving of a chicken. Don't you think so? She said the Casper. Oh my gosh. That deserves a chicken. Did you know that? This is, you know, you'd be surprised, administrators, how much information is available to you from this Casper site. It's not a ghost, but it is through the IBM Global Network. Now you think, have you ever heard that before? Well, where your staff, when they transmit or they upload what they call it MDS data, they log in. Hike. Good catch. What they do is on their little desktop, there's a little yellow world, right? It's called the IBM Global Network. And they double click on it, they're getting ready to upload their data, and the very first thing that comes up is a login screen. And that you've been given a login name, every provider. Now, I can't access this, I don't have a provider number. IPRO can't access it because they don't have a provider number, but you do. It's like HAT, whatever number. And then there's a password. Do you know what your password is? Does the DON and administrator know what the password is? What ends up happening is that it becomes the MDS coordinator's password. And they put like things like their nickname in high school, you know, Giggles, or their grandson's name, or they give some kind of, their pet name is Cookie. So they have some little goofy password that only they know. Because MDS coordinators are very anal people. They have to know it all. And they can't tell anybody else what that is, because everybody else is going to screw it up. It's their stuff. It's my computer. It's my password. My thing. I do that. Someone's going to screw it up. Right? MDS people are anal people. They're very type A personalities. Right? But the interesting part about that is that that is not your password. It's the facility's password. It's how you log in to the MDS system. It's called an intranet. It's not an internet. Intranet. Very safe, secure site where you upload data. And the problem is that there is a wealth of data available to all administrators and DONs and anybody about the data that you have submitted. Like, for example, he can go back and see how many times it tells me when I've transmitted. It also tells me that it's called an MDS activity report, how many MDSs I transmit per batch. It even tells him the warnings I got with when I uploaded the data. And administrators, that's something you're going to want to know. Do you realize that when they upload data to this, to the state database, it goes through a series of edit checks? Okay, because I could tell you, oh, I transmit all kinds of assessments in a week. that doesn't mean that they're ever accepted. Okay, they can transmit 1,000 MDSs. Just because you transmit them does not mean they're ever accepted, because in order for you to get credit for these MDSs, they have to be not only sent, but they have to be accepted. And they go through a series of edit checks. The file goes through an edit check, and the actual data, the actual MDS fields go through an edit check. You're looking for blanks or inappropriate values or just really interesting data. And then they'll print out a report called the validation report. And the validation report gives you warnings or tells you if it was a fatal error, which means it was never accepted. And administrators and DONs, FYI, you should get a copy of that report. Because you know what? A warning that comes up is that the MDS on this person was completed late. And so is that a one-time event? Or do all of a sudden now I keep getting assessments that are completed late all the time because you have to have an MDS done every 92 days? Well, the system will tell you if it's late. And so it also, it's a win-win for the administrator and the MDS person, because it shows that you do a good job if you show them that they're accepted. And it's also a way for the MDS or for the administrator to keep an eye to make sure that of the MDSs that you sent that they were accepted. Okay? But the only way you know this, administrators and DONs, is if you understand how to log in to the IBM Global Network. So I make a suggestion, and you know what iPro did? Wonderful, wonderful thing. They printed out, I'm not sure if I have a copy up here. They gave a document back on their table which shows the steps of accessing your own quality measure information. The actual steps that you go through, it's a, there it is. Can I borrow that real quick? It says the NHQI data preview, and it says share folder access, and it's out there on the table if you didn't pick up a copy before, you can do it at the break. But it's information on how to access this data. Here's also another suggestion for you. One of the things that I would do if I was the administrator or DO1 in here, I would ask the MDS coordinator or whoever is responsible for doing the data entry or whoever is responsible for transmitting MDS data, for them to type up, based on the system that you have, the specific step-by-step instructions for logging in and uploading and downloading data. The reason I say that is because if you don't have a detailed process in place, a lot of times if you get a brand new MDS coordinator in, let's say for instance I came from Nursing Home X. At Nursing Home X, I used AccuMed software. Okay? For the last 5 years of my life, I've uploaded with using AccuMed. I come to your building and guess what? You have Answers on Demand. That's the software that you use. And so I know nothing about it, do I? And I guarantee that they're not going to fly people in from Answers on Demand to give you that personal training. And so either the training you're going to have is someone who kind of gives you a little bit idea, or you have to figure it out on your own. That can waste valuable time. So you should have a process. So right next to the MDS coordinator's computer, or right next to the person, should be a detailed list of how you upload data, how you download data, and how you access the Casper reports or the key system right here. So I make a suggestion for a good practice. All the administrators in here, you should go download your July quality measures. The only way, practice, you need to get in there, because you need to know how to log in. So, and I make a suggestion for MDS people that are in here, please, when you change that password, because the password on that initial screen will change every 3 months. They will ask you to change that. From a security standpoint, that's cool. But when you change that password, it should be a very professional password, and it should also be given to the DON and the administrator so they know what the password, that login is for that period of time. It's not your password, it's the facility's password, okay? Thoughts, comments on that? Okay, this is a great time to take like a 15-minute break. And there are additional restrooms available in room one. My goal today is to have you out of here by 3:30. So you must help me. So do not go to the bathroom, just hold it all day. So what, a UTI comes up, come on, you can have worse things than that. Okay. Whatever makes you happy. No, you're not. I'm trying.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Chronic state measures. You will see now when your information is published that there are two types, chronic care or the chronic stay and the short stay. The chronic stay are people who have been there for at least 3 months. Okay, the people who tend to be in your facility for a long time. Okay? From several months to several years. Now, the calculation for these measures, when you see them, are based on something called a valid OBRA assessment. So I want to explain to you what an OBRA assessment is. If you look on the very front page of your MDS form. What am I done with mine? All right, the very front page of your MDS form. I want you to look at that real quick. And you'll notice in that left-hand column something that's, it's section AA number 8, and you'll see where it says reasons for the assessment. Okay? Reasons for the assessment. And you'll see there's a top block, AA8A. And then there's AA8B. You say that 3 times fast. But AA8A and AA8B. Reason for the assessment. Now, for those administrators and DONs in here, this is where they pick the type of MDS that will be done. So all the assessments that are listed in AA8A are called OBRA assessments. These are ones that are mandated by federal law, regardless of payer type, regardless of diagnosis, regardless of age. If you're in a Medicare, Medicaid certified building, you will do these assessments. These are required by law. These are OBRA assessments. The key piece, so Medicare Part A, Part B, private, whatever it is. The key piece for this, these MDSs, they drive the care plan. That's the key for these assessments that are OBRAs. They drive the plan of care. The most important date, not all dates are important, but one of the most important dates for these OBRA assessments is the date that the assessment is completed. So the key pieces in AA8A, they're called OBRA. Number two, they drive the care plan. That's their focus. They drive the care plan. And three, their most important date is the date that they're done. Now, AA8B. These are Medicare PPS assessments or other state-required assessments. These are not OBRA. They're not required by law for everybody. These are only done for Medicare Part A people or if it's a state-required assessment. So, they're not called OBRA. They're Medicare assessments for the most part or state-required. They don't do anything with the care plan. They could care less about the care plan. Their main focus is payment and coverage. So these don't deal with the care plan. It's payment and coverage. And the most important date for these guys is something called the assessment reference date. Now, I want to explain to you what this date is. Please turn and go over in one page, and on page 3 of the document, it's left-hand column, it's A3A, called the assessment reference date on the MDS form. I will explain to you what this date is, especially to, I know the MDS coordinators might know this, but I'm going to talk to the DONs and the administrators about this. This is a very important date on the MDS form. There are many important dates, but this one establishes the last day of the observation period. They even clarified this again in April. So if you happen to look at the revised training manual in April, then you'll notice that they re-clarified this section. They wanted people to realize that whatever date is applied here, that this means it's the last day that data is used when you consider answering those 600 questions on the MDS. So if today, if my assessment reference date for any kind of MBS, I don't care what it is June 30th, then the information that would go on that form, on the MDS form, is information that's taken up through midnight of tonight. So up to 11:59, 59 p.m., information is then collected. As of midnight, bam, the door shuts. Information is not looked at after that point in time. It's not used for that assessment. So it's the last day of the observation period. So when you have a look back period of 7 days, how do you figure out what time frame or where in the chart I should look for that? Well, you start with that day and you count back. So it'd be June 30th, 29, 28, 27, 26, 25, 24. So it would only be June 24th through June 30th. Now, this is something interesting. I'll go and I'll do lots of chart reviews. I'll be doing chart reviews next week. And one of the things that I look at is I look to see what the assessment reference date was of the MDS. And then I go and I look to see when people signed off on it on that first page. Okay, which is AA9. Now, as an FYI for you, a good practice is that your staff should not be completing the MDS until the next day after the observation period closes. So I wouldn't anticipate seeing somebody's signatures on the MDS until July 1. They can sign off that they did their sections July 1, but they're only using documentation or data that occurred from through June 30th. Now, different items of the MDS will have different look-back periods, and that's going to be key for whoever it is responsible for that section of the MDS to know that. So, like, for example, if I'm looking at someone dehydrated, which is in J1C of the MDS, that only looks at over 3 days, 30th, 29th, 28th, end of story. If I'm looking at continence, it goes back 14 days. If I'm looking at the mood section, it's over 30. If I'm looking at a fall, it can go back 6 months. So it's important for you to know that. So as a reviewer, if you want to go back, take an eyeball, go look and see when people are getting their stuff done. Because what will end up happening is people struggle with the timing and the scheduling of these assessments. And you'll see where the assessment reference date is June 30th. That the staff have signed off and it's done on June the 30th, and the RN who finishes and looks the whole thing is all done on June 30th. They're all done on the same exact day. I don't know how you can possibly do that because the window's not even closed yet. But go back and take a look to make sure that you're not all doing it all on the exact same day. That's one key piece to take a look at. Okay? But it's a very, very important date because that establishes the last day of this period for collecting data for this assessment. Now, only an administrator can answer this question, and only if you've not won something. But, okay, I want you to this is an administrator only question. Please tell me the significance of the assessment reference date for a Medicare MDS. And not that it establishes a look back period, because you'll give me that one. And not tell me, well, it tells me I picked the best day for money. That's not it either. So what is the true significance? Because you should know this. If you're driving the ship here, you should know if I'm your MDS coordinator, you're going to want to test me on what I know. Because all of a sudden, if you have, let's say, for instance, you have 30 Medicare beds and you run a lot of Medicare people through there, you want to know that I know what to do there, don't you? So what is the significance of the assessment reference date for a Medicare Part A assessment? What is its significance? Yes? Oh my gosh! Chicken! What she said, you know what, you are the first administrator out of all five to answer that the first time. So she gets that, but what she said was that, that's okay. Well, what she said was that because you're only given a set number of days, And that's the most important part. Now, yes, it establishes your payment. I understand that. And yes, it's the endpoint of the observation. Yeah, I understand that. But you know what? You're only given a block of time. And if your MDS coordinator has no clue about what that block of time is, then you, my friends, are in trouble. For example, on a Medicare 5-day MDS that you do, you are supposed to have the assessment reference, not that it's done, but that the assessment reference period must be between days 1 through 8. You have a choice. So what happens if your MDS coordinator accidentally puts day 9? Is it okay? What happens? For how long? No, you don't get a default for 14 days. For as many days as it's late. And so actually for the first 8 days of the stay, it'd be the default. Starting on day 9 forward, you would have then your correct rug category rate. Well, what happens now if your MDS coordinator has been chided because of that? So, oh my gosh, I'm not going to let that happen again. So now my Medicare 14 day, I know I have to, I'm going to put that on day 10. I'm going to be a little early, because that's okay too, right? So what happens if I'm a day early? Because the assessment reference period for 14 days between days 11 through 19 if you're using grace days. So what happens if I put it as day 10? It's like, woohoo, you get a gold star because you're early. What happens if I'm a day early then? You get the default payment for the number of days that you're early. So it's the same kind of thing as that I'm 1 day early, so I get 1 day of default. And that can mean a lot of money for your building after a point in time. So it's important for you as administrators to understand how these dates are being applied to this document, okay? Yeah, I also have other presents that are up here as well. And I don't know why, I get the feeling that I need to give this to somebody in particular. I have these little, I've got these little high flyers, little Frisbees, and I'm gonna give this, I get a feeling in this room that someone's name is Frisbee. And I'm thinking it's gotta be like over here. Isn't there someone in this room who has like a last name of Frisbee? Maybe? Yeah, I have to say that because we were putting out all the name cards last night. I go, look, there's someone named Frisbee. I must give her a Frisbee. So because of your last name, you get a little, it's a little happy face Frisbee. Aren't they fun? She's a high flyer. Woo, score. All right. But anyway, I just, and I hope there's no one in here that, like, my last name was like money. Because you're not getting any, all right? You can't say that. But anyway, but I do want to point out to you that about what the assessment reference date is, because it's the end point of the observation period, but it sets the tone for data collection. And the administrators, why you should know that in particular is because, especially on the Medicare Part A, because you only have a certain time frame that you can do it in. And you need to know how that's being set within your own building. So when they calculate your chronic stay measures, it's based on an OBRA assessment, that means AA8A, being done in that target quarter, so 3 months, that in that target quarter, they will look at the assessment reference date. So that's how they make a decision. Did they have an OBRA assessment done in that target quarter where the assessment reference date fell in there? That's what they're gonna look at, okay? And then for the post-acute care, now they look at, it's the 14-day PPS assessment. So, oh, that was quick. You guys are getting quick on me now. All right. That this is, the short stay people are there usually less than 30 days, not always for, some maybe less than 30 days, some maybe more, but for the most part, they look at the short stay people, and it's whether they had a 14-day PPS assessment done. That's an AA8B. That in that 6-month window, did they have a 14-day PPS assessment done? Okay, that's it. So let's talk about some of the terms that you're gonna hear. I'm not gonna go through a lot of detail with these. Some you already know, I'm gonna pass by some. If there's anybody in here who just loves statistics, then this is your thing. Okay, but we're not going to go in a lot of detail, but we're just going to talk just some of the terms that we'll hear today. First one is exclusions. And that really the exclusions, as an FYI for you too, the quality measures and quality indicators, they have similar areas that they reference. Like, for example, there's ADLs in the quality indicators, there's ADLs in the quality measures, there's a MOODS in the quality indicators, and there's a MOODS in the quality measures. But they're not the same. They have similar pieces, but the way that they're adjusted or people are excluded are different. So just as an FYI for you, you're not comparing quality measures and quality indicators are not the same thing. But anyway, so some people will be excluded from these measures based on a diagnosis, based on their admission date, because guess what? Admission MDSs are not included in the quality measure statistics. That's kind of cool. If missing data, and that's only would be missing data if you had a poor kind of MDS software package that didn't do a good job of edit checking, or a clinical condition like end-stage disease. So there are things that you mark on the MDS or the type of MDS that you do that will exclude them from the measures, and that's kind of cool. And each one has their own types of exclusions if they have an exclusion. Something's called the numerator, this is very similar then to the same concept of the quality indicators. These are the number of people that actually flagged or met the criteria for triggering that particular quality measure. The denominator then is the population that they said, well, they could have had it. So now realize too that the denominator is not going to be the population in your nursing home. Because remember, this is after they've been excluded, and this doesn't include like admission MDSs. So you may have 100 people in your building, but if 30 of them were new in the last quarter, well, then they're not going to show up because they're not going to be part of the denominator. So you have to also keep in mind that the denominator may not be your population, it's just based on the people that could have had that condition after exclusions. Then they're going to do risk adjusting, and we're going to talk about this just a little, not a lot, but they will risk adjust. And they do that for your benefit because they want to level the playing field. They don't want you to look like a poor performer based on things that were outside of your control, based on conditions or problems that occurred outside of your building. Well, why should you be penalized for that? So there are many of the quality measures are risk adjusted to take into account things that are outside of your control. And there are things, for example, like the resident conditions, like the diabetes or peripheral vascular disease. You can't stop that per se, but you can try to manage it. But these are things that are outside of your control. There are things that they're not going to risk adjust for, things that are within your control. Like, for example, there's no risk adjustment at all on the restraints quality measure because they feel that a lot of that stuff is within your control. Okay? Again, so they use what they call exclusions as part of risk adjusting. Then they use something called stratification, which is they put them into a high risk and low risk. And these are based on resident conditions. And then there's something called regression. And we're not going to really talk a lot about regression, but it's a way that they look at data and they either give you credit that something's happened to somebody. It's almost kind of like what the facility mission profile kind of was blended into this. So they look at a lot of resident characteristics. And this is all explained in chapter 4, either 4 or 5 of the quality measure manual. So we'll just suffice it to say that they do a lot of risk adjusting. And for our purposes today, and even within your facility, you don't have to know all the very picky details on how they do the regression and all this stuff. So we're just going to kind of move through some of this stuff right now. So if you want to read that, the exclusions and stratification, that's really just for your own personal knowledge. Okay? We'll go now to where it says understanding the data. And just please make sure that you realize that it might get worse before it gets better. And that, to me, is indicative that if you go to more training, then you may, as you start to collect data, it may start to look worse before it actually starts to get better. You all of a sudden start collecting ADLs differently, it may look horrible for a while until all of a sudden it levels out. The way you collect moods, it may look bad for a while before it levels out. But it's just a way that just realize that it might not look well to begin with. There are, again, the state and national averages are reported, and these aren't benchmarks. They're not meant for you to try and do what the the state does, because again, you're not comparing apples to apples. You have to realize that the MDS data includes pediatric nursing homes, right? That's not the same population within your buildings as most of the buildings, so it's not comparing apples to apples here. But again, I think the key for this is that the public, and how many people in here, how many facilities have ever had to explain or answer questions about your quality measures to somebody who's asked? Is anybody in here? And that's been about the response, maybe one, maybe two people within the course of a room of this size. And so, to me, I wouldn't say, well, if they don't ask, I'm not going to tell them. I would take that as an opportunity to share with them what you know. And also, if your numbers look good, and some of the facilities around you were not as good as you, well, why not use that as a marketing place? Say, hey, look, here's six of the nursing homes in our area, and look how we compare to them. So it's a great marketing advantage as well. So, you know, hopefully your numbers are good. But I mean, even if they're not, please explain to them, if they have seen them, you know, this is what they mean. And it shows that you're knowledgeable about your own industry, okay? You'll hear something called the target assessment and the prior assessment. Target assessments is what they look at for most of these quality measures. The target assessment is the most recent MDS that was done in the quarter that they're pulling data from. Okay? And they're looking at the assessment reference date. What was the was there an assessment reference date within that quarter that they're picking? Okay? You'll hear something called the prior assessment. The measures are going to be one of two kinds of measures. A measure can either be what they call a prevalence measure. And a prevalence measure means it looks at, to me, the best way that I can ever remember what prevalence means is that prevalence sounds like present. So prevalence measures look at the most present or recent MDS in that quarter, okay? And most of your measures are prevalence measures. They're looking at the most recent MDS, just that one. Did that condition or was that marked on that MDS? Some of them use the prior assessment, and they're basically looking at the change of somebody from one assessment to another. Those are called incidents. Measures. So they're looking at, okay, how did the person compare on this assessment when we look at them from their previous one? A change in time. You'll have many, like for example, the ADL is a prevalence measure. Okay? They'll look at from where they were before, at the moods is a new one. It looks at where they were like before, where they are now. As an FYI, remember I told you that for the chronic care measures, the admission MDS is not used, and that's true. But when they're looking at incidence measures, it can be used if it's their first assessment. So if I'm looking at someone's first quarter, okay, well then I have to have it compared to something, so they will compare it to the admission as a baseline. So let's now go through the post-acute care measures, okay? Again, they look only at the 14-day PPS. So guess what? If in the course of that six-month window, you had someone come in and they were only there for 8 days and you did the 5-day Medicare assessment and then they went home, well, they won't be included because they have to have at least a 14-day PPS assessment to be considered. These people could have been discharged. So it includes discharged people as well. And if there's more than one 14-day PPS assessment, because for some people, you'll have them come in and out many times within their stay. Well, they'll only use the most recent one. Okay. And so they don't care about what, remember I told you that, maybe you know this or not, but you can combine assessments. You can have an OBRA and a Medicare assessment. Well, they don't care, from the post-acute care measures, they will ignore the type of an assessment in AA8A. The key for this one is whether it's a 14-day Medicare. Okay, all right, that's cool. So now let's actually talk about the three measures. And here's what they are. The first one is percentage of people who have delirium, people who have moderate to severe pain, and then the new one, because they got rid of the improvement in walking, is the percent of short stay with pressure sore. So that's new. Okay, but remember, these are all looking at the 14-day. And I think that's key for you to know, because the 5-day is not looked at. So these are people that after even 14 days of stay, at least kind of 14 days of stay, that they're showing these items on the MDS. So pain is the same, delirium is the same, except for delirium was revised because they got rid of the facility admission profile. Walking improvement is gone, but now they have the pressure sores as new. So it's a little graph that kind of tells you what's new. And so now let's talk about these three measures. The first one is delirium. Oh, this one's an important one. First and foremost, this is, again, taking it from the 14-day PPS assessment. And it says here, short-stay residents with at least one symptom of delirium. This comes from, if you look at the MDS form in B5. So if you look at, turn over the MDS and look at section B5, and you'll notice on the right-hand side, it's on the page 3, I think it's the right-hand side, the third or fourth one down, B5 on the MDS. Indicators of delirium or periodic disordered thinking, I think is what the title of it is. And you have three choices. I'll be talking about the MDS throughout the course when I talk with these, but you have three choices with this. You see, first of all, you'll see that there are six areas that they're asking you to look at, right? Like easily distracted, periods of lethargy, there are six of them. And your staff or somebody is supposed to provide each of them with a value. The value is either zero, which means what? It never happened. One means, oh, the behavior was present, but it's not new. And the third choice is like, well, the behavior is present, but it's new or worse. And that's the key, because this will only flag if it's coded as, any one of those is coded as a 2. And the reason why they say anyone, because they say that even one of these might be a good prediction of delirium. Now, here's the problem with this area. I'm going to tell you probably throughout the course of the day what areas I think require some good in-servicing on for your professional staff. This is the first one. Because many people, I'll bet you even within your own facility, they don't understand the difference between delirium and cognitive loss. They don't understand it because it looks kind of the same. The key for this one is, first and foremost, my first question would be to you is, how do you collect this information? And do your staff know, when you look at these MDS items that they're asking you on this page, you'll see they give you a title, and then they'll give you examples of what that means, like easily sidetracked, loses train of thought, moves lips and talks to people not there, confuses night and day. Your staff just won't know that. They just won't know that that's what they're looking for. And the whole purpose today also, again, is that you're trying to teach your people that in nursing homes they document, but they've been taught that you document when things are abnormal, things are out of the ordinary. The MDS could care less about that. The MDS wants to know, did this or didn't this happen? So you're going to need to teach your staff new ways to document. They should be documenting when these things occur. This is over 7 days. And so the key for this piece as well is knowing whether or not these symptoms are new or they're not new. And that's the key piece. Because on this one, it's assuming, why do you think that they care about this on the 14-day assessment? Because it should be gone. Because by the 14th day, these people should not be still showing these symptoms. Because remember, 2 means that they're new or worse. The key for this section of the MDS is their staff to be able to talk to the family to know whether or not this is normal for your father to talk off the wall. Is this baseline? Has he always done this in the past? Because if you don't know that, it's knowing the baseline for these. This requires an in-service. You need to have your and all staff to look for these key pieces and know the definitions for each of these areas. This one's tough. And delirium is very different from cognitive loss in that delirium is life-threatening. It's a medical emergency. So it's a level of seriousness. And guess what? It's the very first RAP that you have. If you look at the list of the 18 RAP areas, it's number 1. The concept of the RAP, when it's, because it'll flag with anything in B5. It actually flags us more things off the MDS. But the reason why it flags for your staff to take a look at it is because they're afraid. Because it has such horrible implications if you don't treat it, they're going to say, we're going to make it pop up, and you take a look at it. So, in a court of law, you are innocent until proven guilty. When the delirium rap flags, and this is honest, when the delirium rap flags, then you should consider that the resident is considered to be delirious until you rule it out. So they are delirious until proven not. So that's the reason why, if you look at the rafts, if you got the handout for the rafts, they go through a grocery list of things for you to consider if it's new or worse. Like, is it based on medications? Is it a new med? Is it an increase in a med? Is it you got rid of a med? Is it based on an infection? Is it based on a disease? Is it based on isolation? Is it visual, sensory? And they go through all this grocery list for you to try and rule out things that may be causing this. Certainly, it could be a progression of their cognitive loss, but they want you to rule out all their possibilities so it's not delirium. Okay? So this one's a key area. So my question is for you is, who's responsible for collecting this, and how do you collect it? I'm kind of stealing my thunder for this afternoon, but this item on the MDS should be collected in that 7-day window every shift. It should be collected every shift. And the key for this one is knowing, yes, whether or not it's present, but whether or not it's new or not new, or worse or not, you know, it's normal or abnormal.